Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Sticky Tape Williams.
Okay, well that doesn't even make any sense. Nobody knows what that's in reference to.
We are literally sitting in the studio. We had tried to put up some posters and some in frames, and Spencer just had a battle, and let's just say... Spencer has to take a walk away from the battle right now.
One out of three. I think they're too curved.
Also with us is intern / stenographer / part-timer / coffee bringer who brings no coffee, Amy.
Yeah.
Yes, because it is not coffee season currently.
It is always coffee season. Who are you? Don't you have any skill as
a
barista?
You just switched to cold.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, we got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the recently dropped Netflix streaming film, The Adam Project. So stick around as we dive into that. But Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite stream platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at philosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website. We got over 300 episodes, allegedly, all ranging from anime to action to romance to comedy to even discussions about the film industry. We have everything. If you're looking for something very much based on movies, we got it. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on any streaming platform. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we are there. Let's see, Audio Boom, Player FM, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Spotify. Did I say Pandora?
Pandora! No.
Pandora, tune in. You can tune into each and every one of those places and find us. Give us a subscribe, follow us, give us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And also, you can catch us on the socials at facebook.com/philosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at philosophy101. There, we're posting really awesome and fun stuff. If you haven't been there, you're missing out. And if you have been there, shush. We've got a great show in store. As I said, we're going to be talking about the recently dropped Netflix film, The Adam Project. But before we do, we're going to do a little bit of movie news. And at the top of that list, of course, just recently, not even hours ago, the She-Hulk trailer has dropped. She-Hulk Attorney at Law, starring Tatiana Maslany as Jennifer Walters / She-Hulk. That's a lot of shishes. Will star alongside Mark Ruffalo, Tim Roth, Ginger Gonzaga, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Jamila Jamil, and Benedict Wong. This trailer
is by Mark Ruffalo.
I said
that. Yeah, I know. Sorry. I wasn't listening. Keep going. You're a bad intern.
You literally just have to listen and you would know. So anyway, the trailer just dropped recently and I don't want to be the thorn in the shoe here, but it looks okay. It looks good. I mean, it's good to see Mark Ruffalo back in the, you know, Hulk form. Because last we had seen, he was in a sling at the end of Shang-Chi, and we didn't know if that was going to be something we were going to see again. So, I don't know. But this particular character in Marvel, I don't know a lot about. Mm-hmm. And to be quite frank, it looks like it's targeting a very niche audience for this particular character. I don't know. What do you guys think? Up as Amy pushes up her glasses.
They're falling off my face.
Uh-huh. Into that pit of gatekeeping that you're about to do. Go ahead.
No, they were literally falling off my face.
So thoughts. What are your Spencer, what are your thoughts on this trailer?
I know nothing about this character.
Same boat.
So I don't really like the only thing is them putting Attorney at Law in the title just makes me think about Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. Which I know this has no relation.
No.
But it would be fun if it was that ridiculous.
I actually had thoughts, like, when I saw that, I was like, huh, I wonder if they're going to be like maybe, or she's going to be like a rival to Matt Murdock, or maybe they're going to incorporate that. Like, I don't know. I know she's an attorney in the comics. I know that she's the cousin to Bruce Banner. I know that much, but there's not a lot of information that I'm aware of. And obviously you as well, Spencer, that kind of has me hyped about this. I mean, it looks cool. I give it that. I mean, it looks really cool, but I don't know. Let's kind of toss it over to the woman who's got her nose in her phone and trying to look up information so that way she has something to say.
Thanks. That's really, really nice.
This isn't a visual podcast.
Thankfully, so. No one can see me except for you guys. So when it comes to She-Hulk, I know a little bit about her. 1980s, she got injured, got a blood transfusion from Bruce, and that's how she ended up having the She-Hulk abilities. Yeah. Oh, the shake of the head. Talk to Ms. Vincent.
No, I'm just like, why would he do that? That seems like a crazy thing for him.
Wouldn't it? Well, and the thing for her is that she has a... Before we saw a smart Hulk coming out towards the end of the Avengers section of the... What was that? Phase 3?
Endgame? Are you talking about Endgame?
Yeah. Okay. I thought he was also smart before that, but eh.
No, he was...
Okay, just Endgame. So we saw Green Bruce. Anyway, she's always kind of maintained that ability to maintain her personality as well as, like, control. So she could be essentially hulked out, and like we see in the trailer, she's kind of just going along with her day-to-day. They have pitted her against or said that she can rival for law abilities Matt Murdock, which is, they've said it prior, and she was always, like, the sexy cousin, which is creepy, and we're not going to...
I'm thinking because like comic books were really big on creating the scandalous like 12-ton boob like type super female superheroes.
It's the
Do you remember Captain Marvel's not Captain Marvel, Supergirl's outfit or what was it? Power Woman?
Power Girl.
Mm-hmm. She had like a huge opening gap right between her boobs. And so you literally saw that huge gap there, and it's
and
like
she had a little tiny cape on her shoulder, and that was it. And then it was basically
and it was a skin tight white
one piece with really high cut hips. but so for She-Hulk, so I know a little bit about Jen. I know who her best friends are. I've kind of seen her back and forth. She's an on again, off again Avenger, as well as working with the Defenders. Primarily, that's where we end up seeing her the most. As well as Heroes for Hire. So this is going to be kind of interesting to see as we're taking a turn. And most recently in comic books, especially after the Civil War II run, where she got really beat to high heaven. And the transition was her processing through her PTSD, losing, spoiler for a comic book, losing her cousin because Bruce ended up dying. Being killed. And then moving into her taking the mantle of Hulk, but not wanting it to. So we were focusing more on her moving through her trauma, her PTSD, and coming to love herself again. So I don't know. I'm intrigued to see this variation of her since there are so many. And traditionally people are like, she's the sexy green woman. So sexy right now. And you're like, stop.
I mean, it's an interesting concept. And like I said, I'm not against the idea of having somebody like a female led, more modern, I guess, or more forefront type superhero. Cause obviously we had Jessica Jones, but Jessica Jones was kind of a bit more behind the scenes or not behind the scenes, but kind of more back in terms of notoriety. So who knows? I mean, maybe we'll get something really unique out of this series. It does seem, like I said, to be, you know, pandering to a very niche audience. I feel like it's going to be very much like Marvel reaching for that that grouping of like maybe men and women who really like those type of lifestyle shows, like kind of like
Sex in the City kind of.
Yeah, that's what I'm yeah, those kind of shows.
The thing is that she's so much more than that. She provides an anchor to a lot of other female characters within the MCU, including Valkyrie, and Kate Bishop, Squirrel
Kate
Girl.
Bishop?
Yeah, Kate Bishop, Squirrel Girl. Like you see, Sue Storm is one of her best friends, which I don't think we're gonna get to see in the show. No. But she's got she's kind of like the for the women. she's kind of not a full linchpin, but she has her hand in like every storyline with these other strong, powerful women, and they go to her for advice. So I don't see that happening with this one entirely. This seems more like a Charlotte and Samantha. I've never seen Sex in the City, by the way.
So I have no idea.
I'm pulling this out of somewhere, and I don't know.
I can see
But it feels, yeah, it feels more like that. And I don't know how I feel about that.
The series debuts August 17th on Disney Plus. So, and speaking of Disney, Disney and Pixar, Pixar Animation Studios have announced that its 27th feature film will be a film called Elemental. This movie, with the release of art from the film, as well, concept art, as well as a logo, have debuted on all the social webs and all the, you know, outlets. Directed by Peter Son, who also did The Good Dinosaur, and produced by Denise Rehm, who also, you know, produced The Good Dinosaur as well. Essentially, the synopsis for this film is the film journeys alongside an unlikely pair, Ember and Wade, in a city where fire, water, land, and air residents live together. The fiery young woman and the go-with-the-flow guy are about to discover something elemental, how much they actually have in common. So that'll be interesting to see. I'm not too sure what it's going to look like, if they're kind of teetering along the same lines as Inside Out, where it's kind of psychological as well as, you know, entertaining and so forth. But I don't know. I mean, did you guys get a chance to see the fan art?
Mm-hmm.
Or not the fan art, the concept art?
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
I think I don't want to hear about any other projects till I'm able to watch them. That's where I end up with Pixar. Like I love a lot of their projects, and so, like, I hate seeing, like, interesting things, and then it's like, okay, but you got these other things coming up, and I'm like...
Like, you guys remember when that Jack and the Beanstalk...
The one that never showed up, but yeah. They made mention of it, or they had the Easter egg in Onward, and you're just like...
Or wasn't there supposed to be, like, a Gecko one that they had released?
Yep, that was in one of the Toy Stories.
Uh-huh.
Toy Story.
I thought it was in Frozen 2.
There was a Gecko poster on the wall in Andy's room.
Oh, well, who knows? Either way, I don't know. Like, the idea, they're getting very further and further into that. Like, let's try to take something super, like, obscure that wouldn't have any kind of story element, and then let's put in the idea of death or something. Like they incorporate something surrounding it, and I don't know, like, Inside Out was a really big stretch, but it worked. Mm-hmm. Mainly because of the ensemble cast that they had. I don't know how well this is going to work. It almost seems kind of like we're doing an Osmosis Jones.
Don't you dare bring that thing.
Hey,
up.
David Hyde Park was in that movie, cut it out.
He was the pill.
And
all I remember, he was the pill, because everything else that was human aspects was really gross in that movie.
Did you forget about Bill Murray? Bill Murray's in that movie.
Isn't Bill Murray the host?
Yeah?
Yeah. They made him look extra gross. It was mean.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I have to kind of agree with Spencer, though. I do feel like, yes, announcing it is great, but if you're going to announce it with like an actual poster. Give us something solid to go off of. The film is set to debut on June 16th of 2023, although that is subjective because every time we get a date, it always gets pushed back. So I guess we're shooting for next year with this one.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But you would think, though, like at this point in time, they'd have some kind of clip or some type of...
D23 is coming up. Why would they give it to us now?
Why talk about it all?
They want to start bringing in some buzz and then be able to do like the sister.
They're already bringing in buzz. It's called Lightyear.
I thought that's what D23 was for.
It can be. I don't know. It was like talking about Wonder Woman 84 before they showed the trailer or they showed the clip at San Diego. So they're like, oh, buzz, we're talking about this. Are you excited for this? Instead of being like, surprise, you don't know anything about this project, but we're throwing it at you right now.
We got a carnival barker over there. So here's the thing. Like I said, I don't know. I agree with Spencer. I feel like if they're going to show us something, if they don't show us anything at D23, I feel like I'm just going to write this movie off as it's not technically happening yet, just because they made the announcement.
Like The Good Dinosaur that neither of you have seen?
Do we really want to talk about movies you haven't seen?
Well, we're talking about two people that the biggest thing that they've done is The Good Dinosaur, which is a movie about legacies.
They've done other things.
It says partly cloudy, the short partly cloudy, and both of them were on the movie The Good Dinosaur.
Okay.
So, are we... I don't know what to expect.
I don't either.
And I'm kind of like, okay. And just like that, with that nice little... Okay.
By the way, Peter Sahn is... he's the guy who plays Emil from...
he's the chubby rat from Ratatouille. That's the brother that likes to eat the garbage.
Mm-hmm. That's him.
Aw. He's got a nice voice.
He's also the pet collector in The Good Dinosaur.
Oh. That's... So. That one's really funny.
So we shall see.
Okay, sorry. I got distracted. Keep going.
But yeah, like I said, the film debuts June of next year. We'll see how it goes and see who gets cast. And we'll take it from there. So, but enough about movie news. Let's talk about what everybody is here for real. And that is Netflix's recent... Well, it's not even recent. But Netflix's release... 2 months old. Netflix's release of the film The Atom Project. This is one of those types of movies where it's definitely a sneaky one. Like, I wasn't too sure how I was going to feel about it. I wasn't too sure going into it how I was going to feel about it. But it did take me by surprise, and I'm anxious to hear your guys' opinion on it. So before we dive into it any further, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
After accidentally crash landing in 2022, traveling fighter pilot Adam Reed teams up with his 12-year-old self for a mission to save the future.
Directed by Sean Levy, the film stars Ryan Reynolds, Walker Scobell, Mark Ruffalo, Jennifer Garner, Catherine Keener, and Zoe Saldana. There wasn't a lot of information around the film in terms of notes and little clues, whatever, but there was the information that on the day of the release, director Sean Levy was announced as director of Deadpool 3, which also stars Ryan Reynolds. We've also got a lot of the really interesting information about, like, Walker Scobell, who plays young Ryan Reynolds, young Adam. He is actually set to play the role of Percy in the upcoming Percy Jackson series. So that'll be interesting to see as well. But the thing about this is that the fact that there's not much to go off of, the only actual trailers I saw of this film were probably in, like, those ensemble Netflix trailers, you know? The ones where they, like, put everything together and they're like, oh, everybody should, you know, check us out because we got this coming out and we got that coming out.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Did you actually see a trailer for this movie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw, like, an actual trailer.
For this one?
Yeah. Like, before it came out.
I don't recall any of them.
Oh, okay.
So... What about you, Ames? Did you see a trailer for this one?
I actually did. I saw actually a little bit of lead up to on Ryan Reynolds' Instagram talking about when they were filming and how much he loved his co-star and he was so excited to see what else he was doing. So I saw a very brief one and then it ended up being in like the collection of what's coming or the coming up next month type of reel as well.
Mm-hmm. So this movie, as we stated, deals with time travel. And you all know, if you've been listening long enough, that we actually have somebody here at the table who adores time travel films, or at least a tent pole in the time travel genre, which is Back to the Future.
Yes.
And that is Spencer. Spencer is a huge time travel nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually anxious to ask, you know, in terms of time travel experiences, time travel movie experiences, not time travel experiences.
deja vu.
What are some of your areas of expertise outside of Back to the Future that kind of build up your time travel knowledge?
Time travel movies specifically. Let's see. There's Flight of the Navigator.
That was a good pull.
This one's a bad one. The what was it? The Time Machine. Both the 70s one and the recent ish.
Hey, I liked that one.
The moral
with Guy Pearce and what's his name? Jeremy Irons as the leader of the Morlocks and Orlando Jones as a librarian computer system.
It was very nice.
I'll give it that. He was good.
I mean, I liked it. I don't know.
Yeah, those are the ones that I can like think of off the top of my head that aren't Back to the Future. I know there's like a few other ones that are like, you know, Saturday afternoon ones that came on and I just loved. But like, I love my, like me, a good time travel story.
Yeah, yeah. I know you do. Like, that's one of your things. Like, I think if ever there was an opportunity just to ask you, hey, you want to watch a movie? I know I could hook you in with a good time travel film. So,
yep.
Speaking of hook you in, Ames, you know, what about you? What's your knowledge and experience of time travel films?
So, yes, Flight of the Navigator all day. Mm-hmm. I just was like, yay. The creature that I can never remember his name, but he looks like the Tootsie Roll, but the really cute Tootsie Roll that does the dance. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Spencer.
I don't right
doing this like, nah. I'm doing a dance and nobody can see it. It's ever so Spencer.
Yeah, we're getting scared here.
Back to the Future, that is like...
Aside from Back to the Future.
Oh, well, then the Time Machine movies.
Did you see Bill and Ted by any chance?
Yes, okay. All Bill and Ted's, including the one where their latest music one with their children. Then there's so many DCOMs. That was really problematic. Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, yeah.
That could be slightly problematic. The Wishbone episode of Time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm trying to think if there's other. Oh, Timeline? Was it Timeline?
With, what's his name? Paul Walker?
Yes.
Yeah.
Timeline. I saw that one.
I think it was Paul Walker and Steve Zane.
Yeah. And then I'm.
And Gerard Butler's in it too.
And I don't know if we can count. I haven't seen the one with Bruce Willis where he travels
by. Oh, Looper. Yeah.
Aha! Look at that. I didn't even see what I'm like. I know there's time travel movies, people. Primer's not about time travel, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Hey.
You haven't seen Primer, though.
No, but I was listening to a podcast and they brought up Primer and I was like, that sounds like something should have not seen.
I need to rewatch it.
It's a great movie.
But look, I brought up talking points.
You did. You did bring up talking points.
I'm a terrible intern.
I'm actually kind of saddened, though, that you forgot one that you constantly moan and groan about.
What did you forget?
Well, the Doctor Who movies technically
could
count.
No, we're talking about major movies here.
Major movies.
You forgot one really big one that you probably have tried to push on every single person that we know to watch, mainly because you try to interject the little bit of knowledge that you have in saying, do you know it was a kid's book first? Do you know it was a kid's book? Have you read the book?
There's a lot of those. And then also I'm thinking of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which is an anime. That was problematic. Good. That was very good.
90s.
You're missing. Yes. You're getting distracted.
Here. I am. Force of the Trees. It was a book first. Maybe it was a book first.
Maybe you should put a bowler hat on and go meet the Robinsons.
The movie is, but not the book.
But it's based on a book. Yeah.
It's loosely based on a book, but very nicely based on a book.
Well,
yeah, that does have. Wow. Yeah. I totally passed out.
He literally goes to the future.
And Tom Selleck is his dad.
Sorry,
Eddie, what about you?
I'm just.
You bringing up the movie that I'm like, it's one of my favorite movies.
I mean, it's just interesting that you didn't interject that one. But I mean, if we're talking about time travel as well, like things like. The Terminator movies have to do with time travel. You got another one you guys forgot, X-Men Days of Future Past.
It's the only one out of five of them, five?
There's a lot of them.
Five or six. we lost count after.
Another one that Amy should have mentioned, but she didn't, is Men in Black 3.
With Griffin, it is my preferred Men in Black.
Now, mind you, there's a lot, and you guys mentioned already a lot of good ones pertaining to time travel, but there's also a lot of bad ones.
Oh yeah,
how many B movies do we have? Hey, isn't there a Sharknado that has time travel in it?
Yes, there is.
Hey.
And she hasn't seen it yet.
I forgot
about
that.
But I got excited because you're like, yeah, I could talk about that one.
Oh my gosh. But no one should. It's so.
Freebirds is a time travel.
What?
The animated cartoon?
That really? Thing's a time travel movie?
Yeah, he's about trying to save the first turkey.
Whoa,
I had no idea what it was about. I just saw it and I was like, this is going to be awful.
Turkeys.
I mean, Spencer, Black Knight with Martin Lawrence.
That's
like a kid in King Arthur's
Court.
A Connecticut kid in King Arthur's Court.
Well, there's also the one with Whoopi, where it was a Disney Sunday Night Movie, where it was like a Yankee in King Arthur's court, where something she traveled like back in time too.
Or she's like a New Yorker or something.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like a lot of what I kind of consider really great time travel movies, like obviously, Back to the Future,
yes,
but also things like Tenet. I think Tenet's a really good one.
Do any of the Star Trek count?
The third one.
Yeah, where they went back to the 80s, which is a fun one to watch.
Yeah. yeah, that was a very interesting one.
we have to get whales.
Why?
She has to watch it. I have to admit, I really actually like The Time Traveler's Wife, the movie.
Oh, not the one that's now become a HBO show.
That looks horrible. Midnight in Paris.
I forgot about that. With Owen
Wilson. So,
wow.
Oh, my God. but with all those time travel experiences in terms of with film, I honestly don't think that any of them would have prepared me for the emotional, like, downpour drench from this movie that it offers.
The one that punched you in the nuggies.
It punches you in the nuggies. And I want to hear first impressions from you guys as soon as the movie was over. And I want to start with Spencer, because I feel like Spencer's going to have a very unique answer here. As soon as the movie was over, your first thought?
I was not expecting such an emotional film.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's gotten me quite often, and I was very upset about it. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, let's have some fun. Let's do some nonsense.
It's Ryan Reynolds. Oh, yeah. He's going to do Deadpool impersonations.
How serious could this possibly be? And it's like, ha, no, super serious. Your dad died. Like, that's what you're going to deal with. I'm like, dang, okay.
It's true. Amy, what about you? First impressions as soon as the movie was over. And remember, people can't see you.
Yes. So I will use my words to paint a picture of me going, oh, I want to hug somebody.
That was going in a very different direction.
Jennifer Gardner?
She needed a hug.
That poor woman got the brunt of the abuse in this movie.
She needed a hug. The dog needed a hug.
I don't know about that, but like Jennifer Garner just seemed like she was beaten up in this movie.
So
like,
sad.
Yeah.
Emotionally just like...
You know that that scene where they are actually in the bar?
Mm-hmm.
That is actually the last scene they filmed for the entire shoot.
Aww.
So after everything had gone on, like with the filming and everything, that scene had to be shot. And it's like, huh. You can see it. You can see it. Anything else, Amy, other than your, huh, noises?
Well, and it's funny that you bring, all the noises. I can make goose noises too. It's really funny that you should bring up the last scene that was shot, was the bar scene where, spoiler, adult Adam, Ryan Reynolds, is sitting across from his mom, Jennifer Garner, right?
Mm-hmm.
My brain. And he says a line that I remember before.
Are you going to talk about spoilers in this before we even get into the movie?
Well,
you're talking about the movie before we even get to the movie.
So
first impressions.
I want to hug people. And okay. Then I'll talk later about
Let's talk
about your heartbreak in this movie, Eddie.
Right? I mean, we're over here already talking about jumping into the movie and I haven't even given my first impression. Sheesh.
You want to cry? Get you some tissues?
I mean, I have to admit, I didn't expect this movie to be anything decent. The last Ryan Reynolds Netflix film we saw was that Notice or Red or whatever
Notice.
It was called.
It was Red.
It was what? It Red?
Yeah.
Oh, Red not Notice. Red. Yeah, it's Red Notice because mm-hmm. Red is the one with Bruce Willis and.
Yes.
And yeah. So that was the last Ryan Reynolds streaming film I saw. And I'm not going to lie. It was on the same platform, Netflix. And I'm like, I can't do with another one of those. Like, it's just one quip right after another, and that's what the entire film is made of. And so, honestly, after the film ended, I was like, this movie literally is a lie. Like, it positions itself as like, oh, this is going to be a fun movie. You got a kid, Ryan Reynolds. You got a grown-up Ryan Reynolds. They're fighting. They're shooting. They're doing whatever. You know, oh, Zoe Saldana somewhere in the background. And then they're going to go and fight and kick butt and stuff. And then you watch the movie and you're like 20 minutes in, because it's an hour and 40-something minutes.
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes in, you're already like clutching your chest, like, I need to call somebody and say I'm sorry. Like, I need to make this call. I'm
gonna be honest, I kind of wanted to call my mom.
Yeah.
This movie, and just see, like, what's going on?
I think I was in the same boat. I'm like, I need to call my mom and then tell her I'm sorry if I was a little crapper like when I was a kid, and then I need to call my dad and say, please don't go. Like, I am 35 years old, and I needed to call somebody at the end of that movie, because the movie just completely takes over this emotional tone interlaced with its comedic beats. And I felt like the way these cast of characters worked out their roles, it was seamless. It was like beautiful orchestration of the way they worked out in the movie. So I saw this movie the week before or last week, whatever, because I was going to do I was going to go on someone else's podcast. They'd invited me to be a guest on it, and they asked me to see it so that way they could talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, I'll just watch this really quick, and I'll push through it. I'll like look for all the little boring parts of like Ryan Reynolds or whatever, and I'll just fast forward. I didn't fast forward once. Nice. I literally had to tell the guy to push back a whole hour because I knew I wasn't going to be pushing forward after that first 20 minutes. As soon as I was done seeing it and I headed out, I'm like, this isn't the type of podcast. It doesn't cry. I gotta call someone. Like, that's literally the way the car ride was over to his studio. So, thanks a lot, Ernie. this was a very unique movie, and it definitely takes you by surprise. And I think one of the best ways that it does is by the acting. Mm. I mean, I have to say, kudos to Ryan Reynolds for not being overly Ryan Reynolds, but just enough to where he didn't steal the show, and there was enough space for everybody to be highlighted. Yeah. And not to say that Ryan Reynolds is a bad actor, because when he's on, like, mm-hmm. that's the way he works. If he's like the star of the film, obviously he's going to be the star of the film, and he's going to do what he does. I.e. like Free Guy this past year. Was it this year or last year?
Last year, 2021.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, time's accelerating, man.
Shush. So that was like Ryan Reynolds, foot down on the pedal and him being super him. In this one, I half expected that to happen, and it didn't. It was like, it was given space. It was given opportunities. Ryan Reynolds had opportunities to showcase more than just his comedic acting. Mm-hmm. And to be able to give somebody a platform where they're not only comfortable enough to do that, but they're also willing and able to do so on camera for a film that could be completely like Guardians of the Galaxy. It could totally just be comedy through and through, and with smidgens of like emotionality here and there. Mm-hmm. This movie is such a complex story that you had to have somebody willing to do complex acting to make it work. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, what's interesting is like, since like you got like Ryan Reynolds like taking like his foot off his Ryan Reynolds gas,
yeah,
is that allows Walker Scobell, who's playing the younger version of him,
yeah,
to kind of match him almost in like, because like their personality wise, you can believe like it goes up like that, like,
yeah,
like the kid will be him based on how they act, which I feel like, you know, like they mesh really well together based on that.
And I don't feel like it was forced either.
No.
Like, he wasn't trying to do a Ryan Reynolds impersonation. He was just being him.
Yeah.
And he was, yeah, that's right. He was keeping up.
Yeah. I think that Walker did such a great job. Literally, you could see little glimmers of Ryan-esque isms in him without making it so blatantly like, oh, I'm trying to be Ryan Reynolds. I'm trying to be Deadpool. And then to complement that, we have, when we get to his interaction with Jennifer Garner after the first, like when they get home and suddenly he finds out she's going on a date, or no, she comes back from the date, and it's just enough Ryan Reynolds there and just enough him, like in both of those spaces, and you're like, okay, this kid is a bit of a butthole, but he does it so well, and she bounces back and matches him too. And it's something kind of refreshing to see a young actor be able to stand toe-to-toe with veteran actors,
yeah,
and not only keep up but make the scene feel rounded in a way that it's natural.
Yeah, and I feel like for him, as a child actor, creating that arc that he does where he is that little jerk at the beginning of the movie, but by the time we get to the end of the film, in that small space of literal time and space, he actually shows so much growth as a character. The progress of that particular character is so visible that you can't help but feel like, being a viewer of this, you are part of that accomplishment. You're like, oh my gosh, this kid is amazing. I watched this amazing thing. And it's so true how it isn't him trying to act like Ryan Reynolds. It is his own comedic beats filling all those spaces that Ryan Reynolds, a veteran actor, is giving him. There's apparently a video out there where Ryan Reynolds, I guess, was doing a live stream, or he was recording himself or whatever. And I believe the kid, who they're like in the backseat of a car or whatever, the kid does like the entire opening story, or the entire opening for, I think, the first Deadpool.
Yeah. And he does it, and it was on his Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
that was the thing that I remember seeing, and I was like, I don't know who this child is, but I need to know who this child is. Like, it's wonderful to see, because from here, the sky's the limit. I mean, he has the opportunity to, I'm not going to say restart, but when he gets into the Percy Jackson role, it's entirely his to do with whatever.
Well, he's
going to
make it his own. Like, yeah. Like absolutely. I feel like his opportunity here is to create something fresh for that particular franchise, which, let's be honest, fans of that franchise have been waiting for that third movie for God knows how long.
Gnawing at the bit for years.
And so now that we're actually at a place where they're going to create a series, and we already know this actor, this kid, is phenomenal, it'll be interesting to see him fill out that role and really become something of, you know, a standout performer.
You want to know what's interesting?
What's that?
Like, I was just looking at his credits. This is his first thing.
Oh,
really?
He hasn't done anything before this.
Get it, Walker.
Wow.
Out the gate, just smashing it.
It's like Alfie from Jojo Rabbit, where we're like, we love you. We want everything for you. Come back.
That's cool. I didn't even know that. So there you go. I mean, he's definitely somebody who's going to be on my radar. I want to see more of his projects. I want to see more of what he has coming down the pipeline. I just really hope that nothing kind of gets in his way in however that Hollywood explanation sounds. So, who knows? Were there any other standout performers for you guys in the film?
Yes, for me. The very, not fully microscopic, but small, straight-up badass that is Zoe Saldana. That she came in guns a-blazing. She did the jam. The entire relationship on screen with Ryan had a chemistry that didn't seem forced. It was like they were friends, but they could keep up with each other. And in their choreography, in their conversations, in their goodbyes, it was more human than her interaction with Chris Pratt when she's Gamora. Like, Star-Lord and Gamora feels a little cagier. This felt more like they're partners, they're a team, and like, this is your ride or die.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I love you so much.
Yes, I was completely sold on the relationship. Oh, like, the relationship was so natural. It had honest chemistry. As opposite as you would think these two would be, you're like, oh, that's Ryan Reynolds. He's usually this and that. Zoe Saldana is like a quiet type of power, but she has it. And it's like, very rarely do we get a chance to see those types of moments. Like, Guardians has been a really great exhibition of those, but I mean, she's also done a movie. She did a movie that I actually really, really like called Colombiana, where she plays an assassin, and she's phenomenal in that movie too. So it's interesting how you put these two together, who are very strong in their different aspects, and then they just like mesh. They just fit, and you're right. Like, it almost feels like they've been in an actual relationship for so much time that this is just a on-screen representation of that.
Yeah, and I think one of my favorite parts for that is the quick representation when he finally finds her, and he's like, oh, and this is little me, and she's like, babe. And it's just, it's the beats don't miss, like, at all. And it's something that's, I think the term, like, across the board for this, for the actors, for the relationships, it's organic. Like, we haven't even talked about Mark Ruffalo or Jennifer Garner in response to their not only their relationship, but their performances, right, Spencer?
And, yeah, and that alone there is a whole nother... They've been best friends for God knows how long. They've been good friends. You know, and you had 13 going on 30. You had several other instances. And then you have this where it's almost like a grown-up variation of 13 going on 30 relationship in the now time frame. And I could totally see, like, if there's some kind of, like, random theory by Sean Levy is like, oh, by the way, this is actually a multiverse, you know, universe where they actually did get married at the beginning and he became super smart working with his, you know, radio and then created this whatever. Like, that would make sense to me. But there are another couple, like Amy was saying, that have just natural chemistry. They just seem very much like they could fit in real life together, you know? Was there anybody else that stood out to you or anybody you wanted to highlight, Spence?
No, I think, like, those are the core actors that, like, really just stood out to me.
We didn't bring up what's her name that's the bad guy,
Catherine
though.
Keener.
She's, like, she went hard, and that was just very uncomfortable for me. It was good, but uncomfortable. What did you think?
Like, honestly, I was like, what are we doing to this woman's face?
Right?
What is happening? This is insane. Like, just put some makeup on her to make her look younger. Not everything has to be CG. Like,
true.
They made her look like a robot.
Beep, boop, boop.
Like, if I was her and I saw that, I'd be like, no.
And my first thought was like, Netflix, you got money to make a proper deep fake. You know, if you have YouTubers who are creating, like, proper, real, good deep fakes, why couldn't you do that for Catherine Keener?
Also, just hire one of those YouTubers if you don't have anyone who knows how to do it.
Like, it made sense just to, you know, do something like that. But it's like, it was really struggling. It was almost on the same level, unfortunately, as the first time we see Luke in The Mandalorian. That face just did not match anything.
It was uncomfortable, but I was just like... But she was just... She was ruthless. Like, there was not a show of remorse in, what, 2055 her or whatever it was. And I'm just
only,
like...
Only when her empire was threatened. That's when she got emotional. That was the only time, because she cried when she was talking to her younger self in talking about how older Adam could cause an issue for their future. Like, that was literally the only time.
She just seemed like she was coming at people with shotguns, with laser guns, with guys in a lot of tinfoil. Like, she seems sketchy.
Maybe that was a kind of...
She was.
Maybe it was kind of symbolic of the only person she can actually be real with is only herself.
Ooh, so don't get that deep.
But this movie is definitely a unique story in how it is portrayed. And one of the things I have to admit is we get a lot of time travel talk nowadays, especially on the heels of, you know, what everything happened with Endgame, and then now we have Multiverse of Madness, which isn't time travel, but still it's multiverse travel. Or you were actually just mentioning a little bit ago, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
Like I said, which isn't a time travel film. It's a multiverse traveling.
The true multiverse film.
But it's still in that essence of, like, traveling through space and time. It is still on the tips of everybody's tongue and talking about it. Pertaining to this particular one, though, I feel like this movie doesn't do anything new. But I feel like the way it approaches it with its performers make it feel fresh. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
I think it's a combination of a decent enough story with really great acting.
Yeah.
And that's what really sells it. It's all the acting that really... Because, like, you start swapping people out for, like lesser, like, actors.
Lesser known actors or something.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Nearly the same. And it's going to probably feel like a regular Netflix movie.
Yeah. It's like everybody's a second tier type actor, and then it's just Ryan Reynolds, and it's like, I'm okay. What do you think, Ames?
Sorry, what? I'm just gonna. I'm gonna drive everything to a halt. I apologize.
So what I was asking Spencer was, my opinion of the film was the story wasn't unique, but what made it fresh was the addition of the performers that made the story feel fresh.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've had those types of films where, you know, going back to destroy the source or going back to, you know, find some type of unique type of information or revelation or going back to reset things gone bad. Like, we've seen that before.
A lot.
It's literally part of the story element for Back to the Future. You know, it all goes back to the time machine, which was first concocted in 1955. So it's cyclical in that manner, which I think most the best time travel films are. But I feel like in this manner, the ability to include great performances from these particular actors really sell the story.
Yeah, it ends up turning... Like I'm literally thinking about it. And in this one, we didn't have a save the princess directive from the jump. Like, we didn't have that. It started with he's stealing a ship, a rocket ship that has, it can time jump. I almost said time turner. Oh my gosh, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Dang it.
You're really fingering him out later.
But traveling back in time. We don't know his objective at all. And then even getting there, we vaguely get an objective, but it's not a strong enough objective to keep the movie moving forward where, like, we have to go. Like, the deadline and the stakes, while are high, seem more personal than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what balances the story in such a refreshing way, because we no longer are going... Well, we have to be here at this exact time to do this or else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting. By the way, you also forgot that other great Bruce Willis time travel film.
Oh,
Disney's The Kid.
Oh, yeah. I liked The Kid.
That was a very heavy, emotional Disney movie.
Seriously? That
movie tears you to shreds. That little kid.
Close my eyes. Count to three. He's, sorry. I was literally quoting the movie. Keep going. The little kid.
I think you have headphones on. I'm gonna turn your headphones up really quick. But yeah, I feel like that's definitely one of those strong elements of the film in terms of the story. But what I really, really want to know is, how do you guys feel this compares to other recent streaming films?
On Netflix? Because it's kind of on the better side.
I agree.
It's a really low bar.
I have
to agree. Because this is one of those movies where I literally wrote it off. I was not actually expecting to have an enjoyable time watching it.
I asked you if you were excited to see it, and you said no.
Nope. No.
Why would I watch that? No. And I was like, well, maybe just like it could. He's like, no. Don't ask again. I'm not going to watch it. And
I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to see.
I'm going to. Maybe watch it in secret? I don't know.
I mean, to be fair, Netflix has not had, like, you know, the stellar reputation with their movies.
Yeah.
And the only reason I saw it, like, the day it released, and it was only because it was a time travel movie, not because I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I was like, yeah, let's see what they do here. And I was kind of shocked.
I mean, it's comparative to what we've seen thus far. It's one of those types of incidences that are, like, super random at its ability to be better than just blah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Between this one, in all honesty, the most enjoyable ones that I've seen in the last 3 years, honestly, is this one, Palm Springs.
That's a time travel movie,
which,
too.
Yeah, which has to do with time and space as well. I mean,
and that was from Hulu. I wasn't even expecting anything.
That was left field, 100% left field from Hulu.
I mean, it's very few and far between, though. Like, there's maybe one or two. HBO is literally just putting out actual movies.
Yeah, so.
And it's
surprise,
like, you know,
it's a movie.
Same thing with, like, Paramount Plus and Peacock. Mm-hmm. They're all just putting out actual movies. And so it's difficult to kind of see the opportunity. Like, right now, I'm actually anxious because at the end of the month, I believe, or next month, Amazon Prime is going to release one of the movies that I actually was excited to see from South by Southwest, which was Emergency, which looks really good. It's essentially about two African-American kids in college who are planning to go out on a night to go party, and they come down, or they get to their frat house or whatever. They go to their house, and there's a young white girl passed out.
Face down in the living room.
Face down in the living room next to, like, her own vomit.
And then upstairs playing video games is their...
He's Hispanic or whatever, and they're like, you know, we can't call the police because...
We're all
brown people, and they'll, you know, think we did it. And so it's like a whole night of them trying to figure out how not to get, you know...
Get her help, but not get in trouble. Like, not get in trouble.
It looks really good. And I'm excited. That's going to be debuting on Amazon. Amazon was smart and put up the money for that one. I want to see that one. But it's very few and far between. And so I feel like there has to be some sense of... Not even censorship. It has to be like a filtration system of, like, put the bad movies on, like, the lesser, you know, the lesser known days or whatever, and then just let's promote the heck out of these really good ones. Because if I was just going off of what I had seen based on the trailers that I had seen, which were those collaborative trailers for Netflix, I honestly wouldn't have seen this movie. You know, plain and simple. I didn't seek it out. It was not, like, on... you know, YouTube in between, you know, videos or whatever. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
Well,
be honest.
No, well, for me, I did seek it out because you
sought it out.
So, like, I'm in a different spot because, like, it, like, got me at that, like, real niche for me where I'm like,
yeah,
I want to see this to see if it's terrible or good.
Yeah, but that goes back to something you do. Like, you like to find those, like, horrible, like, oh my God, did you see it? It's so bad. I'm like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, see, that's the thing with Netflix. Like, they need to just not do mediocre movies for me. For me, they need to either be really awesome or really bad. Like, I'm fine on either one of those. I'm just bad with, like, something where it's like, what's he even talk about? There's nothing. Why am I talking about this? Uh-huh. But, like, for this one, for other people, yeah, I can kind of see why other people might not take notice, because Netflix has a secondary problem of they greenlight everything. Well, that's not going to be a problem anymore because of changes going on at Netflix. But, like, because they greenlight everything and because there's so much content, I think, like, what was it? I was listening to someone talk about, like, there was so much content at one point that Netflix at a certain time had one new thing releasing per day.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's...
Like, why?
Because, like, they're trying to be, like, you have to stay at Netflix. But, like, when you have that much content coming out, like, you're going to get lost in the noise.
I mean, what
was it? We're talking about this 2 months later.
Their last fiscal quarter, they reported on in April, they had stated that they had lost over 200,000 subscribers. So, I mean, if this is their attempt at, like, flailing, like, come see us, like, it's... I wouldn't. Like... I don't know. It's interesting. I keep the Netflix subscription because I want to be able to keep up with whatever's coming out, especially since we do a movie podcast and they do movies.
It makes sense.
But if I didn't have to, I wouldn't. Like, earnestly. Like, I would just not have them at all because it's not that much of a highly used commodity. Well, you know, also, outside of, like, the random, not random, but the eventual, like, release of, you know, series that I watch, like Stranger Things, or...
Yeah, but, like, what they're doing is, like, they're pricing themselves into a position, I don't know if they realize this, where they're going to move from, like, oh yeah, just stay subscribed all the time, to, well, what's coming out that I actually want to see, because then I can just, like, cancel for a few months, because once people realize that they can cancel, they're in real trouble.
Hey, what about you, Ames? What do you think?
Well, the funny thing is that we're having this conversation about Netflix putting out films and they're not being good. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Yes, they have a good chunk of stinkers, but Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
I mean, that's one.
They did. Well, I liked Dig. I kept bringing up Dig. They had done Always Be My Maybe, which was ridiculous. But Over the Moon, Moxie, which I saw, Tick, Tick, Boom, everyone was... Uncut Gems, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
That, so aside from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, those are all movies within the last 2 years.
No, they're not.
What's the oldest one there?
The three. You're looking at 2018.
For?
Scruggs.
Well, I said aside from Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
2019 is the next oldest one on that.
Which is like what I said, 2 years. 3 years.
But we're looking like... You've got Marriage Story from 2019 as well, which was great. Eurovision, which everybody like flipped out about.
That was ridiculous. Nobody saw that one.
Apparently people did, but it wasn't me. So in juxtaposition for... They have a... Because, like Spencer said, they greenlight everything. It's kind of like, hey, you a little bit of money here, you a little bit of money there, and you're going to get the mixed bag. But when they're good... I mean, when did Roma come out?
Roma came out in like 2017?
But... And then that's... I think that...
2018, sorry.
See, and that therein lies kind of the rub, where they're giving... Because we're getting little gems of movies... sprinkled in, it makes me go, okay, I'll hang on to it just in case.
It's like this. If you were sitting at the end of a conveyor belt and they said, okay, we're going to start rolling this out, you keep your mouth there, and stuff is going to fall into it. If for every 10 turds, a Twinkie falls into your mouth, I would say over time you'd get pretty full on turds. So,
but you also have the opportunity to turn it off.
But you're so here's the thing.
And if I don't eat turds. Like, this because is the have worst.
You did you see any of those other movies?
Yeah.
No, not the ones you mentioned. The other movies.
Yeah. I also saw the Hilda movie.
Look. So I get it. You're trying to play devil's advocate. But the problem is that we have enough issues. I mean, we literally talked about this with Red Notice, and that was with star performers.
They also put up their own money for that.
It still came out.
Yes, it did. And was it a good thing? No. But he's also... Look, I don't have the money to throw around and do The Rock go, hey, I want to make this movie. Come on, Super Pets. Let's make this movie. I'll give you the $100+ million you need. Like, that's what... we're coming up against. Ryan Reynolds was a producer on this for Maximum Effort. So, like, I know he put money into it. The thing that I'm trying to say is, when it comes down to streaming movies, we've come to the situation that there is so much to choose from. You have to be discerning, and depending upon how it's presented and marketed, I can't say it today.
But the thing is, in order for you to find out if they're good or not, you have to see them. Or is that not true? Do you not have to watch the movie so that you could subjectively say, that was okay, that was good, that was garbage?
Yes, but what are you saying? There's just an oversaturation across the market, and you're just like, eh, I don't know.
That's literally what Spencer said, like, not even 5-10 minutes ago.
And then you were cutting me off with turd, like, conveyor belts. Because, and I don't understand, dude.
Because nobody has the...
Help!
Nobody has the time... to collectively go through and see which ones are whatever. You go on the streaming platform and you're looking for something to watch. Now, if every time you go onto the streaming platform, you see the same old ones that you keep seeing because those are the only ones that are good, then what's the point in continuing with the platform? It's just one of those things where, yes, they have some really great nuggets, and they're really great. But for every one great nugget, there's about 20, 30 more that you've checked out, tried to see, saw if it was good, and it definitely wasn't, and so you have that bad taste in your mouth, i.e. the poop, the turd conveyor belt one. So when you've been burned so much from those movies, like we have, since we've seen a lot of these streaming movies, it's difficult to come in with an open mind and a willingness to see those movies if you're so used to the turds that came before it.
Maybe so, I just have a sunnier disposition and outlook on
things. Maybe you just need to see more movies.
Spencer's like, he's not wrong.
Were there any highlights or any issues for you regarding the film, Spencer?
I will,
aside from Catherine
Keener. No, I want to bring
up. Okay, go ahead.
Do
go
it.
Ahead.
No, just that. Like, it was so bothersome for me. But... yeah, I think the only thing I want to highlight is probably like just that whole family dynamic that this family has going on. They really gel well, even though you don't like see them all together like super often.
Yeah.
Because like I really like Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner. Like they only have one scene together in this whole movie, and like it was nice seeing them together.
Yeah, it was.
It would have been cooler if there could have been more of that, but like I just kind of like how.
But he's dead, Jim.
Yeah, he's dead. but like I kind of like how like this whole family works. That's yeah. kind of my thing. I want to highlight.
So true,
Amy.
My highlight would have to be, and I tried to start bringing it up at the beginning of this, and I wasn't allowed to because I was spoiling
Now's
the movie.
Now's the time.
Oh my gosh! You mean there's an actual carved out space for this that you said
so
did not exist?
Sarcasm.
Oh my gosh!
Okay. So, great, just a great moment was Jennifer Garner goes to the bar after a hard day's work. She's sitting there. She's talking to the bartender. And, of course, on the other end of the bar, just gently over-listening and kind of a little gobsmacked that his mom is in the bar drinking, is Ryan Reynolds, who is pissed off. And he's sitting there. And he ends up striking up a conversation with his essentially with his mom. And brings up that teenage boys are like urinal or urinal cakes that talk back. And I was like, okay, it'll be self-disparaging. And then he goes into this really great just convert. It's a really great encouraging conversation to her as a mother. And it's almost like everything he wished he had been able to tell her when he was like looking back. And one line that he says is, boys always come back for their mamas.
You mentioned this earlier.
And the reason I bring it up is because it was not a planned line. Ryan had come up with that after his dad died. He and his brothers rallied around his mom, and he's talked about it in interviews that it was like all the wagons coming around to circle and protect their mom and take care of her. And apparently she still even talks about it to this day, just like the support and how much it meant to her to know that she wasn't alone. And even in her grief, they were there with her to continually support her. And so I was like, Ryan Reynolds. And it's just been really interesting to see like Jennifer Garner talking about her raising a preteen and then connecting here and all the different dynamics. And so that scene really kind of gets to me. And then the final game of catch, I think, is one of my...
Are you doing this again where you add in like multiple different options?
I said the bar sequence, and then my other favorite one was the final sequence for catch.
Okay.
But issues that face though. That face though.
So, okay, that's nice. I mean, I'd heard the story about Ryan Reynolds and so forth, but I didn't know that he had included it into this facet. I know there was a whole ordeal in terms of him losing his father and the emotional trauma therein. But actually, that's really cool how he was able to fixate it into his character for that scene. I would have to say one of my favorite parts of this film, and mind you, spoiler alert, I mean, it's on Netflix. If you want to go see it, go see it. But I loved, one of the best things I wanted to highlight was the fact that I loved that they didn't bring back the dad after they fixed time. I thought that was such a smart move on behalf of the filmmakers, because in most times you're looking to rectify or fix the brokenness of your current time by doing something in the past. We've seen it in several different types of time travel movies. The fact that even though their father, played by Mark Ruffalo, Lewis Reed, even though he knows that at some point in time he is no longer there for his son anymore, it doesn't change how the future still moves, which makes all the more the moments where young Adam gives his mother that big hug that older Adam had said for him to give to his mom, and we see in the future older Adam and then not wife but future wife see each other in that classroom, and they still it's the bittersweet promise of the of what the future holds, in that yes, sometimes it does not always end happily, but out of pain and sorrow you can find your wholeness. And I feel like that was such a great way to end that movie, and giving us not what fans are used to, but giving us what we needed to see. And I feel like that made this movie all the more richer for me. because I feel like that has such a wholesome story to it. It has such more of a wholesome, you know, conclusion than like, oh, he comes out and, you know, his dad's like, oh, hey, son, like he's older or whatever. Like there was none of that. This wasn't like Frequency with Dennis Quaid and Jim Caviezel, where at the end his dad's actually alive and he looks like Santa Claus because he's got a big belly suit and whatever. Like, no, this wasn't the case. And I appreciate the filmmakers. I applaud you for that.
I thought you were going to bring up the I can't even call it the pep talk, but when they get back to the house and it's like right before the final game of catch and Mark Ruffalo just kind of starts giving all of the...
Oh, the affirmations.
The affirmations.
That and was good too. That was really was, good.
And really it was good. Really, it was really well done. And I was like...
Well, and then after hearing the story that you just mentioned in terms of, you know, his father and everything, like, I'm pretty sure there was a sense of cathartic release as well there for Ryan Reynolds. Because, I mean, you can't not think of that situation and not realize partially that Ryan Reynolds may have also had something there that he was kind of dealing with his own relationship with his father. So who knows? I mean, but that definitely adds another layer to the intricacy and the intelligence of this script as well as this film altogether. Mm-hmm. So this brings me to our roundtable question. And I do have a question for you guys. And it's kind of on the lighter side of things because we need to bring this back up after, you know, being in the emotional depths. And my roundtable question for you is, which film franchise would you like to see a time travel plot included in?
Already know.
And it can't, now mind you, it can't be any movie that currently has some facet. Like I'm looking over at our Harry Potter posters.
Oh, no.
You know, so it sounds like I need to start with Spencer.
To my knowledge, it doesn't have one.
Spencer is excited, so I'm kind of like, okay, let's go.
Go for it.
The Fast franchise.
Oh my God.
You brilliant man.
Why?
You.
Why?
They're already going to do it.
Like, they're going to space. They're going to space.
And they're
going to
find a wormhole.
Where else? No. Yeah. Come on. They're almost there already.
They're not turning into Interstellar. Oh my God.
That was not even a concern. But like they're already dealing with super powered beings with Hobbs and Shaw. Why not time travel?
All right. He's biomechanically enhanced.
And you act like this wouldn't make any sense for them to add time.
But that
travel.
Made that movie good.
Yeah, that movie was
I mean, great. The other ones are just bad. I mean, did you see Charlize Theron's dreads
in
that
last... none of these movies.
And then she's got like that... She's got that like bowl cut now in the more recent one. They're racing a friggin' submarine.
Oh, like, yeah, seriously. That was a fantastic trailer. I've not seen any of these movies besides...
No, you haven't, and neither has this one across...
I've seen the third one.
It's a good answer, but I hate you for it. I really do hate you for it.
Because they're
going to do it.
That's the messed up part about it, is it's going to happen. Because
where else can you go? You went to space.
You can end. No. You know, you could just stop. You know, it...
That's... You want the stop the Fast franchise? No. You put your foot down on the gas and you keep going.
Yeah. You risk it for the biscuit, huh?
Yeah. Well, there's no risk. They're just...
Oh, there's plenty of risk.
All the biscuits.
All right, Ames, what about you?
How else do we solve our dinosaur problem but send them back in time? It's not as good as the Fast franchise. Right? It's so dumb. But it would work.
Like they have to like invent like these time guns and just shoot the dinosaurs into the...
Yes. Yes. I mean, then we solve that. I feel like we're just
encompassing We're Back, a Dinosaur Story. Literally, that's what we're doing here. Aww. Isn't that the same concept?
They didn't go back in time though.
No, they went forward in time.
They went forward in time
and then they got that brain grain.
Yes, they cereal. Did. And then, you know, they end up like golfing and they're friends with the children. But this one, I mean, so we could safely put them back where they're supposed to and we'd stop getting edited. But the Fast and the Furious one kind of wins for me. I'm not going to lie. I'd be like, oh, it's like Sharknado. What about you, Eddie? Do you have anything that's so ridiculous? We've covered dinosaurs. We've covered
I feel like
space and cars.
The only thing that makes sense at this point in time, and I would love to see it as the film progresses through the years, a Muppet movie, a Muppet time travel movie, where we see old school Jim Henson Kermit, and we see some of their first iterations, maybe even going as maybe even going as far back as like when maybe Muppet, when they were Muppet baby size, not that they're Muppet, you know, but I would like to see a Muppet movie where like in the near future they're not even puppets, they're like CGI, like human anthropomorphic people, and they're like scary. It gets pretty scary. We're going Meet the Feebles on this, okay? Mm-hmm. maybe not fully Meet the Feebles.
Oh no, please
but,
don't. Please don't go Meet the Feebles.
But I feel like a Muppet time travel movie would be fun. Like I feel like we've gotten touches of it with A Muppet Christmas Carol, but that's, you know, just a standalone type thing. It's not... You know, I want to see like how Muppets Take Manhattan, movies like that, a Muppet movie, but in the frame of a time travel movie.
Hmm.
Yeah. Maybe even that'd be interesting if they do like the whole the time machine, a Muppet time machine movie where like Fozzie Bear is like the leader of the Morlocks. And Kermit,
that makes a lot of sense.
Kermit is
that one.
Kermit is Alexander Hardigan. And yeah.
What? I just want Bean Bunny to be in there somewhere. I like Bean Bunny.
But yeah.
He's going to get sacrificed and eaten by the Morlocks. So, I know it.
So let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. Let's go ahead and go around the table if the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Emmy.
This film passes for me. It's emotional depth, wonderful writing, well acted, and if all else fails... You can blame me for watching it and not liking it. I don't know. Make sure you call your parents.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'm having a problem today.
You okay?
No, I'm right? not okay. I'm not okay. But make sure after watching this movie, you call your parent or parents if you've got both and let them know that
you're... Or if you have multiple sets of parents. Like, yes. You know, so... Spencer.
Did she rate it?
Oh, I'm sorry. She stopped. She
you
stopped.
You broke in at that, you know, 4.8 out of 5 monocles. Spencer,
she literally paused.
Spencer, she literally this is why paused. We can't have Fast and Furious.
I'm gonna turn you down over there. Like, wow. You literally paused, and I'm like, is she done? And it was like a 5-second pause. There's literally a gap here.
Can we call it just back to Fast and Furious, the Fast and Furious 15 movie?
So you're giving a 4.8 out of 5.
Out of 5 monocles, and now I'm passing to Spencer because apparently I cannot be allowed to be anything today.
So this movie passes for me. No, it's a delightful movie. Like, yeah. It's much better than I was expecting when I walked into it, and that made me happy alone. Before you even take into account like people's performances and just like how the movie plays out, it's really fantastic. Go watch it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, okay. You're gonna give it a 4.5 out of 5. In terms of the film, it definitely passes for me. It has a really wholesome and really complex yet still simplistic story, enough that anybody of all ages can understand it, but people who truly know it will feel it. And it definitely carries a lot of those notes of this story is meant to tell a true story. And so it's a lot of that pulling back the layers and really seeing the heart of it. And it really did move me. I know it moved you guys as well. So I'm super excited that we actually got a chance to see this movie. In terms of monocles, I'm going to have to give it... I will be the middle person for both of you. I will give it 4.6.5. Since you did 4.8 and you did 4.5, I'll do 4.6.5 to kind of create some sense of harmony here.
Okay.
I really did enjoy this movie. I feel like this movie has a lot of potential to create more like it. Maybe not sequels. I don't know if I could do with a sequel of this movie.
It doesn't need a sequel.
It's fine the way it is.
100%. It definitely is fine the way it is. And as long as nobody gets like money hungry and stingy or whatever and greedy... Let's keep it that way and just build off of this level of expertise and proficiency. So, but yeah, I liked it. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out anywhere where you can find streaming podcasts in your area. We're on Google Play, Libsyn, iTunes, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. You can tune into any one of those places. Find us there, The Film Philosophers. Give us a follow, give us a subscribe, and listen in. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And yeah. You can also check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have over 300 episodes, all of them on our page. You can listen to anything from anime, romance, action, suspense. You can even hear Amy talk about her Jane on Scene episodes.
On occasion when I watch things. And I can actively remember what our conversation is about.
That's true. Check us out over at our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, you can check us out on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There, you can check out all of our latest posts. We've got all these great things in store, as well as we're going to be putting bits up from Spencer's Big Score, as well as Jane Unseen. And Jane Unseen will have her own stuff to put on her own page at...
at Jane Unseen, if ever I get things and I put them there.
It's true, if goals. Ever.
Goals, much like that Fast and Furious time travel movie, we will be expecting it. Please send your royalties to Spencer Williams.
Yeah.
He needs all of
royalties.
That. Yes.
All for what?
It's intellectual property. He spoke it into existence.
You're spoken into existence, Spencer?
I spoke it into existence.
We want to make a quick announcement, too, as well. If you're in the Sacramento area and you're looking for some fun, head on over to There and Back Games, Cafe and Games on Wednesday, May 25th. We're going to have a Lord of the Rings-themed trivia night. So, prepare yourself for that. Get your hobbit's feet, your cloaks, everything else you need, and your Lemda's bread, and Amy's going to...
Join, grab your fellowship and your Lembas bread. Join us, Harry Feet and all, at There and Back Cafe.
All right. So that about wraps up another awesome episode, and we do hope to see you out there on May 25th. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm confused intern Amy.
Class dismissed.